Across four decades of public life from 1776 until he left the presidency in 1817, James Madison made extraordinary contributions to the American Republic. Yet too often he is consigned to the shadows of history, concealed by more heroic contemporaries, according to our next guest. In his new book, Madison's Gift, Five Partnerships That Built America, historian David O. Stewart looks to restore Madison to a proper place as the most significant framer of the new nation. Again, the title of the book, Madison's Gift, Five Partnerships That Built America. David Stewart, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this idea of these partnerships and really Madison in general?
Well, I've written a couple of books in this time frame and on the early America, and was struck by how Madison is always there. Whatever's happening, he's there for 30-plus years, and at the center of things, and terribly important, but is not much noticed. And that puzzled me, and I wanted to understand it better. So that led me to the topic. As I got into it, I do think some of the reason he wasn't noticed much was simple human nature. He was small, and he was quiet. But I think some of it was he had this remarkable gift of connecting with other people and working together with other people, collaborating in the truest sense. And that makes it a little more difficult to see how much he's really doing. So it's a fascinating sort of model for running a public life, and maybe one we could learn from in any era.
You explore Madison's five principal partnerships with Alexander Hamilton, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, and his own wife, Dolly Madison. What do those partnerships have in common, do you think?
An obvious commonality is that Madison really connected with somebody with a bit more charisma, with a greater public flash. Certainly his wife had much more stature, but physical stature, but also in a public setting, you couldn't miss Dolly, and frankly, you could miss James. And that was true of his other partners as well. Hamilton, Jefferson, Monroe, these are all magnetic personalities. And Madison was quiet. He didn't like public events. And so that was a principal quality. I think he knew that he was never going to excel at the sort of the being in the spotlight. But he also knew he had a lot to offer. And if he could combine with people who had that gift he didn't have, he could have an impact well beyond what he might have if he just went on his own.
Because you talk a lot in the book about how Madison brought out the best in each of them, but obviously they were bringing things out in him as well.
It's absolutely true. They provided the platform on which he could use all of his talents. Most obvious example is George Washington. In early America, Washington was the man. He was the trump card of American politics. And if you could get Washington on your side, you would win almost any political contest. Madison understood that and knew that if he could connect with Washington, if he could make common cause with him on specific issues, that was a great way to succeed. So he worked that very hard, made himself indispensable to Washington.
And you make the point in talking about the relationship between Madison and Alexander Hamilton, which is, back to your original point, is that so Madison is very quiet and prudent, and Hamilton is very headstrong and aggressive, and they join forces to write the Federalist Papers to secure the Constitution's ratification. And even though they have these contrasting backgrounds, well, opposites do attract, and they make it work.
Absolutely. They both understood that the other guy was really good and was somebody they respected and somebody they wanted to work with. And, you know, they made it work. They were very close colleagues for, you know, 5 or 6 years. They did ultimately fall out, which I think was a sadness for both of them. And they fell out on political grounds. At a personal level, I think they continued to respect each other. But it's another important feature of Madison's partnerships, I think, is he would connect with people, but not at the cost of his own beliefs and his own principles. if a partner and he disagreed on something, well, they just went their own separate ways.
Meanwhile, you write about the partnership with Thomas Jefferson, which was quite different because these two men were best friends, and they held the presidency in turns, and they each served for 8 years, which really I found fascinating is they had a 40-year partnership.
Very much. They were soulmates of a type that you can almost feel jealous of. They came from the same world. They grew up 30 miles apart. They were both the eldest. Each was the eldest son of a very rich man, big landowner. And they were both bookworms. They were interested in everything. They knew something about most things. I think their friendship was a lifelong seminar between the two of them, and science, politics, philosophy, whatever it was, they just loved talking to each other. So it was not just a political relationship. It really was a close, close friendship for all those years.
In writing about the partnership with James Monroe, you point out that Monroe had very thin skin and would really nurse grudges for a very, very long time. The two fell out of a friendship, and yet it seemed when the presidency was having trouble, he went to Monroe.
That's right. It is an interesting sequence. They really are on bad terms. I mean, they're, you know, in their 50s, Madison becomes president, and Monroe actually runs against him in 1808 because Monroe is very angry about how Madison treated a diplomatic agreement that Monroe had negotiated. And for 2 years, they don't talk. They have no connection with each other. And then Madison can see that he's going to lead the nation into war against Britain. He knows he's not a very military figure himself. He needs somebody strong in his cabinet who seems a military type, who understands those issues better than he does. He thinks Monroe is the right guy. And so he puts the hurt feelings aside and reaches out. At that point, you know, it's been 2 years. Monroe's getting over it, too. And Monroe's an ambitious guy. It wouldn't be bad to be Secretary of State. So they both, for personal and professional reasons, can get back together. And it really restores the friendship, which then really runs to the end of their lives.
Meanwhile, in the final partnership that you portray in the book is that with his wife, Dolly Madison, who it seems safe to say is the life of the party.
Dolly charmed everybody. There's a wonderful exchange she had with Henry Clay when he says, "Everybody loves Mrs. Madison," and she answers, "That's because Mrs. Madison loves everybody," which isn't strictly speaking true. She actually holds a grudge better than James. But she is somebody who's wonderful in the spotlight. She loves people. She's great in social events. She enjoys them in a way that Madison doesn't. You know, at his first inaugural ball, Madison greets an old friend. He's at the summit of his political career. And the friend congratulates him, and Madison says, "Oh, I would rather be home in bed." Now, not many presidents feel that way at their inaugural balls. But that's truly how he felt. And I think he felt blessed to have a wife who was so good at these social events, who enjoyed them, and who could smooth over things that he just wasn't going to be able to do well.
One of the things that fascinated me about your writing of that time is, well, twofold. One is how productive Madison's retirement was, that he certainly did not go out to pasture. He had a very productive retirement, in no small measure because of Dolly Madison.
She very much made his life possible in retirement. He became increasingly infirm. He lived to be 85, and she was much younger. And his mind never rested. He was always interested in the world. He got interested in what we would call conservation and environmental issues, that the farming should be done more intelligently. He became obsessed with the slavery issue, which he had not done much with in his career. But he felt very sharply just how wrong it was and how hypocritical it was for him to have spent his life devoted to human liberty and still be a slave owner. This really tortured him. And he spent years trying to figure out some sort of system to end it, and he never did. So he spent a lot of time in his, quote, retirement working on public policy issues just the way he always had.
What do you hope ultimately people get out of the book about Madison that that you believe has been missing in the conversation about him?
I think it's really two elements. One is the size of his impact. It's often obscured. I think he is really second only to Washington in his importance in the establishment of the government and the nation. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the political system, War of 1812, he really was terribly, terribly significant. And the other is a softer thing. It's more his style. He's often thought of as this dry creature of intellect. One contemporary said, "I've never seen so much mind in so little matter." He was, in fact, really smart. But he could do so much and form these wonderful partnerships because of his personal qualities, because of his sense of people, his caring for them, and, frankly, the integrity of his own heart. And I think that's something we need to appreciate as well. And I think it's something that, as a style of leadership, is a good one.
The book is fascinating and so important. It is entitled Madison's Gift, Five Partnerships That Built America. David O. Stewart is the author. It is published by Simon & Schuster. David, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
My pleasure, too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Madison's Gift, Five Partnerships That Built America, by David O. Stewart. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.